Well, MG, given all the cricket news that is going around at the moment, it is an absolute honour to have one of the greats of Australian cricket join us in studio. He's got a book that comes out today. The book's called Rod Marsh. Our guest is called Rod Marsh. Rod, welcome to the Rush Hour with MG.
Thank you very much.
Celebrating 50 years of first-class cricket, and I'll tell you what, in them 50 years, you've crammed some in.
Yeah, I have. And I think that's why probably the book was so easy for me to write, even though it took me a year and a half. I'm not a very good writer.
Well, let's do it in chronological order. You went as far back as finding your ancestries back in the convict days. Mm. That must have been confronting.
Well, it was and it wasn't, because I sort of knew that my dad was adopted, but I didn't know the story of how he was adopted. And when I found that out, I mean, I thought, oh, I don't really like my blood grandfather. I mean, he just left my father and the other siblings and just took off with his former wife, which I could never understand why his former wife had him back after he was obviously playing up with this other woman.
Rod, your book, and MG and I have both read it, and MG's got his copy in front of him there, and it's dog-eared, and he's got post-it notes all through it that we're going to get to. But the biggest thing that struck me in your playing career is that, geez, it looked fun. It looked, the way the book reads and the stories you've got from it and the amount of contributors you've got, your former teammates, people you played against, it just looked like you had a lot of bloody fun playing cricket.
Yeah. Well, we did, and that's the thing that I think is probably missing today. It's that professional that they really have taken a lot of the characters, the professionalism has taken a lot of the characters out of the game, and, you know, they're guys that are playing that would love to have played with us, and they say that openly. God, I wish we'd played in your era. And, all right, they'd be poor, but but they'd be rich, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, it is. You know, coming from a rugby league background, it's very similar. You know, the 70s and 80s were the halcyon days of rugby league, when everyone goes, wow, I wish, you know, this bloke here, who this modern player, he should be back in the 80s or the 70s, because that's where he belongs.
And, yes.
Characters, I think, is a big thing lacking in all Australian sport, because we get the older we get as a country, the more PC we get.
Yeah, and it gets beaten out of you nowadays. I mean, you don't dare to be different because you don't fit the mould of a test match cricketer or a one day cricketer or a T20 cricketer. Well, what is the mould? I mean, to me, the mould is someone who's bloody good at it. And, I mean, if he's an individual and he does things a little bit differently and he causes a bit of problem, then surely that's the job of the captain or the coach or both of them to get him playing his best cricket.
Mm.
And if he causes a bit of grief, well, sometimes that's all right.
Rod, you're in the book, you actually name your 11 of the teams that the players you played with and against, and your academy 11 of the players you've coached. In that book, a lot is mentioned your golf and your love of golf and how that was one of the things you like to do away from cricket. I wanted to ask you, what's your ideal golf for? If you had to go and have a round with four blokes?
Wow.
Well, from his cricketing?
It can be some of his cricketing teammates, if he'd like, or...
No, it's almost an impossible... it's not impossible. It's not impossible at all. I'd like to play with my brother.
Right.
And we'd take on Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods.
Oh, there you go.
Brother, who's a professional golfer.
Was
a professional golfer.
Yeah.
And how do you reckon you'd fare?
Well, maybe they'd go the other way. Me and Tiger would take on Jack and Graham.
Well, Graham has a chapter in the book as well, and he talks fondly about early days with you and your farm. Not, it looked like a farm where you were such a sparse surroundings where you grew up, and your dad would be hitting airless golf balls against against the wall, and they had no left-hand clubs, so they made you play right-handed. And your brother said that, you know, if it wasn't, you know, basically you were just as good a golfer as you were a cricketer. You could have been a professional golfer because you were hitting the ball right, left-handed. Was it with right clubs? Left-handed with right clubs, and you're nailing it.
Well, the thing is, if I'd have been a professional golfer, I'd have been a very thin one because I wouldn't have been able to afford food. I could never have made it. My temperament wouldn't have allowed me to do that. I such a bad-tempered bugger on a golf course, me. I like hitting good shots, and if I don't hit one, I snap.
But you're a feisty cricketer. I mean, I just turned 50 before Christmas. I told you before the interview that my dad just celebrated his birthday last week. He was born in 47 as well. Yours is on Sunday. So I grew up with this era, the Lilies, and probably from my earliest memories of cricket is probably from about 75 onwards. So some of them cricketers around the Centenary Test, which is I'm fondly entrenched in my mind. You were out there with Rick McCosker when he broke his jaw.
I batted with Rick. I batted with Rick in the second innings when he came out.
Oh, that's right.
I was not, I don't know, 80 not out or 70 not out, and he came out. And I had no idea he was coming out. And when he walked onto the ground, and I mean, they started singing Waltzing McCosker. That was just unbelievable.
Wow.
I mean, yeah.
Oh, goosebumps.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah. Right, hindsight is you and MG reminiscing about your careers there. Hindsight's a marvellous thing. Did you realise during your career the specialness of those players you were playing with and against, and that maybe 20, 30 years down the track, it would be looked back on like it is?
Not really, although, I mean, you knew that when Lilly got to his mark on the MCG and the crowd just chanted, Lilly, Lilly, I mean, that was always something special and quite daunting for the opposition, I might add. Mm. I mean, he was the best bowler in the fast bowler in the world at the time, and for him to stand at the top of his mark and have this huge crowd chanting his name, it was, yeah. I always thought that Dennis might be a bit more special than anyone. And really, in hindsight, he probably is of our era.
Greg Chappell was one guy who was afforded the luxury of having a chapter in your book. And he said upon first meeting with you, we didn't really like you because you were both 13 or something at the time, and you just looked through him, and he quickly learned that was just how you were. You were such a competitive bugger. And in fact, he nominated yourself and Ian Redpath as the two most patriotic Australian cricketers he's ever played with or against.
Yeah, well,
big rap.
He always used to say that, all of us would die for Australia, but Redpath and me would kill for Australia.
Well, it says it is. He said, Rod... Rod played his cricket. It was hard, but he was scrupulously fair. And I suppose that comes around with the underarm as well. Yeah. When you were disgusted by it.
Yeah, well, I was disgusted by a few things on the field that have happened, especially, just recently. I didn't like that. But that's another story, which I'm sure we'll get to. I didn't agree with what had happened there, but I don't remember not agreeing with it.
Mm.
I've seen the replay 100 times. People have shown me, and I apparently basically said, no, mate, don't do it. And anyway, that's a long time ago, isn't it?
That's the thing about it is to have that happen in your career, such a monumental moment, which defines a lot. Like, we nearly went to war with New Zealand.
Yeah, we did. We'd have won that.
Oh, yeah.
We can't beat them in rugby union, but we can beat them, I reckon.
But it was amazing to be part. And then you got the bloke who told his brother to do that, that action, and then he's writing a book, a thing in your book about how he loves you so much. That's the bond you have with these guys.
We did have a great bond, and just harking back to when I said I was disgusted with a lot of things that happened on the cricket field. Most of them were my dismissals when I got out. I was disgusted with myself.
Well, you're the first part of your career, you were a serious batter.
Yeah, West Indies got me.
Yeah, they get a lot of people, buddy.
Yeah, they terrified me.
Especially now with helmets. You had little clip-on ones. But
you had to watch the ball a hell of a lot closer if you didn't have a helmet on.
Mm.
That's for sure and certain. I think I got hit in the head about 8 times, but 7 of them were wearing a helmet.
Wow.
You really get hit in the head if you don't wear a helmet, which is interesting. Except for that, once again, that's another story in itself.
These stories are in the book. And I love about this book as well is that biographies, and they come out thick and fast at about this time of the year. But what I love about this book, Rod, is that it's almost more of a coffee table book than it is a biography.
Yeah, well, as Dennis said, it's a toilet book.
that's exactly where I read it, Rod. That's exactly where I read it. But it strikes me that your era of cricket and your career, both as a coach and administrator, selector, and all the rest of it, is so visual. There are so many amazing moments. You spoke about the Centenary Test, MG, and the inclusion of all those amazing photos in this book is what makes it such an amazing read.
Brings it to life, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, really happy with the photographs. The guy from Affirm Press, Martin, he said, "We need all your photographs." And I said, "Well, where are you going to get them?" You know? He said, "Well, you must have some." I said, "Well, I think I have, but anyway, I think they're in the roof." Now, I had to get up into the roof and fight off the redbacks, and you know, as you do. I found them. Wow. Amazingly, I found them, and they were in really good nick as well, because I'd sort of sealed them in an esky type thing, which is not a, you can believe that.
Well, DK Lilly features a lot in this book, and you mention him. He was my idol growing up, and with the buttons all the way down to the belly button, with the gold chains, he had that movie star look about him.
He was MG's idol fashion-wise, not so much in sport, but he dressed like him when he went to the clubs.
But he was just, it was bigger than life. He was, and it was when cricket, as Roger said, had their characters. And you're right, there's a chapter in here when you first laid eyes on him at Fletcher Park, was it in Perth?
Yep.
I spent 3 years in Perth, so I know that kind of area when I played with the Western Reds over there. And did you know then when you first, did you hear about this kid or did you?
I heard about him and I heard he was fast. And I was really looking forward to batting against him because, you know, I wanted to see how good he was more than anything. And he was fast, but he was a bit wayward and I got the better of him for a little bit. And then I hit one wide of him. He was fielding at mid on, hit one wide of him and he ran around, picked it up and hit the stumps and ran me out. And I thought, God, that's highly unusual for a fast bowler to be able to field.
Wow.
And he could field in those days, but the longer his career went, the worse his fielding got.
Yeah. That's what a man. Well, like, is he out of everyone, you know, the great people you've met in cricket, is he in the top three?
Oh, certainly. He's also the most generous. He's an incredible man. He's got an incredible cellar right now. Well, he had an incredible cellar until last week, put it that way.
We said in the book, wine, golf and family, but not in that order, are your passions.
Yeah.
that's
Well, look, honestly, when he was at his peak, to me, he looked about 6'6". And yet he's not that tall.
No,
he's just over 6 foot.
Yeah.
But when he was bowling, he looked tall and he looked big and he looked strong and he looked dangerous. And
who was quicker? At their peak, Tomo.
Tomo's fastest bowler.
Ever, nearly.
I've ever seen, put it that way. Well,
and you have spent time, you've set up academies all over the world.
Yep.
Mitchell Johnson was one of your chargers in his early days, and Tomo.
No, Tomo. Tomo is the fastest bowler I've ever seen. Now, having said that, it may well be that someone has bowled quicker than Tomo, but I doubt it.
Your best ever 11, which I love the way you did it, was you wanted to do it with blokes you've actually played with or against. And I think that's fair.
Well, you can't do it any other way.
I don't think you can because otherwise it's speculation.
I mean, how could I have Ponsford and Bradman in? I mean, I don't. Obviously, Bradman's record would suggest he'd be in everyone's, but I mean, I had no idea how good these blokes were.
But the
must have been pretty good.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. But one of the blokes, a couple of you had in that team, the West Indies great Andy Roberts was just, man, he was kind of, he was the first of the scary West Indians that we kind of knew of. And
he was the smartest of the West Indian bowlers by far, I think. He was very good.
What made him the best?
Well, his control, his ability to be able to know what to bowl to what players. Typical example, we're playing the fourth test in Adelaide against the West Indies in a series. Bruce Laird, we're having a beer at the end of the day's play. We've got one day to go and we're going to get beaten. We're, I think, 8 down with a day left to play and we're 400 behind or whatever. Anyway, we're sitting there and we're drinking beer and Bruce Laird said, you know, I haven't had a cut shot since the first test. And he played, this was the fourth test match of the series. And Andy hadn't bowled him a cut shot.
Wow.
And neither did the other fast bowlers because Andy controlled them.
Wow.
He said, you don't bowl anything outside off stump to Laird.
Bruce Laird, yeah. Unbelievable.
He was fantastic, Andy.
Under the Southern Cross I stand.
Yep.
You are responsible for it.
Well, I'm not responsible for the...
Not the, the limerick, the words, or the wording, but
bringing it to the Australian team, yeah. And that was via Ian Chappell originally. Mm. We're having a beer on the Thames somewhere, and he told me the story about one of his mates who used to say it, and he also had a big arm, this bloke, and he used to throw his pint mugs onto the island, which was about 50 metres away. He said, "You reckon you can get yours there?" And I knew I wouldn't be doing that because, A, it would have finished badly somehow, I don't know, and I would have probably hurt my arm, so... and he then told me about this underneath the Southern Cross I was there. And I don't know how or when or why, but somewhere back in this country, I think in Australia, we won a tight game or we won something. And I remember standing on the table in my jock straps, in my jock strap only, not a pretty sight, I might add.
Just and
got everyone's attention and belted it out. And then they wanted to hear it again and... Again, and then after every winning test match, we...
That's incredible.
We gave it.
What's more incredible is the line of people who have been bestowed the honour along the way.
It's good having something like that.
It's fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah. Ian Chappell, the other Chappell brother, who you seem to have a high... By reading the book, you seem to have a very high regard for. He was probably my favourite batsman growing up, and my favourite commentator as well, when watching on Channel 9, along with Richie. But what was he like as a bloke?
He was the most loyal and the most honest bloke you'd ever meet, and still is. He's a very good friend, and I just had to have him as captain. As much as I like Greg, Greg as a player is probably better than Ian, but... You know, in
the whole package you're talking about.
In some ways, I mean, to captain a team such as the one I chose, Ian's the bloke to do it. Ian was, he really knew how to get blokes to pull together. And here's a man. During our days of playing, he'd say to the team after practice, he'd say, "Look, I don't know what you blokes are doing at 6 o'clock, but I'm going to be in the bar. And between 6 and 7, it's my shout." And, you know, the reason he did that, because he got a captain's allowance.
Oh.
And he was ashamed to have the captain's allowance.
Wow.
He had to spend it on his players. Wow. He didn't get a big allowance, and I think they got a massive allowance now, but his was just a pittance, but he spent all that money on us.
There you go.
Fantastic.
That sums him up, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. That really sums him up.
And that's the thing these days. I think, and again, I refer back to the sport I played and the sport that you love as well, cricket. I don't know if it happens in AFL, but there doesn't seem to be that no matter what happens on the field, stays on the field, and when you finish the game, you go and have a beer with your opponents.
Yeah.
No matter what. You know, we used to cop some tongue lashings from a lot of little cheeky halfbacks.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff was very personal.
Yep.
But I knew he was trying to get under my skin to make me a worse player on the field. But not once throughout my career did I get... did I think not to go next door and have a beer with them after the game?
No, and that's the way it should be. That's the way it should be. And it's a bit more difficult in Test match cricket because it goes for 5 days. But, you know, that's when the trouble. You've got time to cause trouble, I reckon, over 5 days. And what you want to do is you want to sort out any differences that you've had. Sort them out so you start afresh the next day. And it's all a bit of fun.
Then it doesn't build up.
No, that's right. It doesn't fester.
Yeah, that's a good... Yeah. Yeah.
It strikes me that if Rod had grown up in the eastern states, he would have been a cheeky little halfback getting under your skin.
I think he would have. I think he definitely would have. Or a hooker.
Hey, Rod...
I prefer hooker.
Rod, the stories we've touched on some of them there. We could go on about the book and everything that's included. It is an outstanding read. It's out today. Grab it. Want to get your thoughts on the current cricket news. The Ethics Centre delivered their findings the other day.
Yep.
Have you read through the report?
No, I deliberately haven't. So I can honestly say, no, I haven't read through it. So I really don't know what's in it. But that would be a bit of a lie because I've read the papers.
Mm. And yeah.
I've sort of read what the... but Tubby Taylor said you can't... you just can't read it in summary. You've got to read the whole lot before you comment. But I think I've read enough... written by people that I, put it this way, that I respect that have written articles, and I don't think Cricket Australia have come out of it too well from my understanding.
Well, you're three. You were the. I mean, you uniquely positioned. You're a former player and vice captain, who was probably dutted for his chance to captain his country. But that's all in the book. Go on, yes. Grab it. You can read that full story. You've headed up academies. You've been a national selector and chairman of selectors. Where's Aussie cricket at right now?
Well, we need a win. Oh my God, we need a win. I'm really quite pleased with what the ACA have come out with today, the Australian Cricketers Association. They've said that the boys have got to come back, and they've got to come back early. And I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
I think that they've done their time now, and it's a massive amount of time they've done. It appears that the reviews have shown that Cricket Australia are partly to blame. So it's the situation changed a little bit, and I think... it would be good for everyone concerned. I think it would be good for, obviously, the players. It would be very good for Cricket Australia if they came out and said, hang on a minute, we're going to have a look at this. And if they brought them back into the fold for the series against India, I think it would be fantastic.
I think it would just be... I think as a nation, we didn't like what they did. And it was systematic of what was going on at the time. And well, they lost their identity a bit. They've admitted that. Now, I think for a clean bill of health, let's just get back on with the game.
Yeah.
And let those kids back in. You know, 6 months has gone. You know, I think as far as, you know, it's not going to be a reward to let them back playing. We've said in the show, you know, tongue-in-cheek, let them back. But we really mean it. And I think it could be the shot in the arm that our Australian cricket team need at the moment.
Well, it certainly helped because they're the two best batsmen in the country.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any doubt about that.
No. In your book, you have a list of 10 commandments that you wrote down over your times of setting up these academies as what you wanted to teach these young developing players. Have you seen the players pact that's come out that Tim Payne announced?
I sort of read a bit of it.
Okay.
It was very brief. It was one of those gung-ho statements that you... if you sit in our corporate meetings, you've got to, you know, we've got to have a mission statement, but it can't be, you know, more than 15 words or something. And that's what it appeared to be to me. It's all very well having all these things, and that's fine, and I appreciate what they've tried to do. But, you know, when someone bumps you and hits you under the chin, you know, a lot of that changes, doesn't it?
What we spoke about on this show is it struck me that this, as you say, it's a very nice statement that they've come with. It's a nice idea.
Yeah.
But when it's day three...
This Vaughan character, the Pommy...
Michael Vaughan's come out.
He's laughing at us, going, well, it's horse shit, basically. And I think the one word they're missing is, look, come and, you know, cry with us and play with us and cheer with us. But not once did they say, let's win with us.
Yeah.
Professional sport is about winning.
Of course it is. But it's winning...
In a graceful manner.
The right way, that's for sure. I mean, there's no room for catching balls on the bounces. There's no room for...
And that's what you're famous for. That's what you're famous for as a cricketer.
Yeah, well, you got to be fair. It's not a gentleman's game. It is a gentleman's game, not always played by a gentleman.
No.
Played by professional cricketers... who want to win.
Yep.
No doubt about that.
Mm.
But they still abide in the main by the laws of the game. And that's why it's, you know, like, for example, you know, this really gets under my skin more than anything. You watch the T20 match, right? And you watch the last couple of overs and you see blokes backing up. They're 4 or 5 yards out of their crease.
Mm.
Now that is cheating.
Yeah.
And what I would do
bring
if
the man
I was
cat
bowling,
back. Man
oh,
cat.
Oh, yeah.
Man cat.
Absolutely.
Of course.
And then you know who'd be the one that was naughty? Me.
Yeah, I know.
Not the blokes that are cheating. God, that gives me that.
Yeah. But it is little things like that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
You know, I know. And it's for.
You can't have it every way.
No.
No.
Well, the batsmen have got it every way these days.
Well, most administrators are batsmen, will say.
Speaking of batsmen, and you've spoken about the lads who are currently serving that suspension. There's a quote in your book about David Warner, and you say, for all the doubters, David Warner is a very good man. His reputation, more so than Steve Smith and Cam Bancroft, has copped a massive hit throughout this, even ongoing. We saw what happened over the weekend in grade cricket, where he opted to leave the field because of some sledging incidents. What do you make of his future in the game of cricket for Australia? Is there still a place for him?
I'm completely biased towards David. I really like David as a young man. I think he's fantastic. I think he shows remarkable respect for his parents. I think his wife and kids, those around him, his teammates. I think he shows remarkable respect for his friends. And sometimes he might go a bit far on the field. But okay, when he had to be good on the field, when he was on the verge of getting suspended, he knew he'd let Australia down if he transgressed again, and he didn't. He kept his gob shut, so he knows how to do it.
Well, he showed on the weekend a bit more maturity by walking away from the situation.
Well, he's a good man. He's a really, really good man, and you know, I want him back, and I want Steve Smith back, and I want Bancroft back. If you've got to remember, if Cam's good enough to reclaim a spot, and I hope he is, but those two guys in particular are needed.
Wouldn't be an interview with Rod Marsh without asking you exactly what went down in around 78, 79 with this World Series cricket. And the songs that came out from Mojo and all these young cricketers, we used to get in under 12s, we'd be singing the song on the way to our games. And cricket, it seemed to be at the pinnacle in the late 70s. Kerry Packer just saw something, didn't he? And not many thought it would last long. But cricket, as we knew then, would never be the same.
Well, when you think about it, the underarm and this ball tampering, and I mean, that's nothing compared with World Series
nothing.
Cricket. When that broke, by God, I mean, we were the...
Where were you? When you first got in contact? When did someone first contact?
When I first in contact was at the centenary test, at tea time on the last day of the centenary test. But I knew about it beforehand because I got big ears. I found out that something was going down. I didn't know exactly what was going down, but... And, I mean, when I found out about it, there was probably no doubt that I was going to play. But I probably had more to lose than anyone because I was vice-captain of Australia at that time. Probably would have been made captain, which would have meant probably a bit of coin passed through my back pocket.
You would have been spending the allowance.
Yeah, exactly. That would have been good. Or maybe I would just spend it on myself. But, we were in Mick Malone and Max Walker and myself were in Amsterdam when the news broke at a party at Tony Gregg's place.
Oh, wow.
And we actually read about it in the New York Times, believe it or not. It was at the hotel. It was quite incredible. And we thought, geez, thank God we're in Amsterdam. We were over there drinking beer, actually. It was and just having a look around. We were picked up by the guy from the... Dutch Cricket Association. He had no idea what we looked like, or we certainly had no idea what he looked like. And he had a cricketer magazine in his hand.
Oh, wow.
And that's how we got to it. Really.
It was just...
had 3 or 4 days over there. It was good.
And
it was,
Michael Holding in the book says that 40 times the pay, he was getting back from playing great cricket. He was getting 40 times more money than he'd ever seen in his life. I mean, did you ever meet Kerry Packer?
Oh, hell yeah.
And did you party with him?
Kerry didn't drink.
Just his cheeseburger, just his quarter
Fanta.
Pounder. His quarter pounders.
In fact, there's one, I don't know whether I mentioned in the book, I can't remember. There's one occasion where they turned off the lights when we were in a winning position out at VFL Park, and Ian was filthy, absolutely filthy chapel. Anyway, the manager, a fellow called Jeff Forsyth, said, come on, well, that beer's in my room afterwards. And Kerry came to me and he said, do you mind if I come along? And knowing that he was a non-drinker, I said, you can come along as long as you have a beer. And he said, well, I don't drink. And I said, well, you can't come. And he liked that. He liked the fact that I went back at him. And he said, all right, I'll have one beer. So as soon as he walked in, I gave him the beer and I made him drink it. And then he could talk to the boys. But Ian didn't come to that.
Wow.
Ian was that cranky, he didn't come.
That's a great insight.
Yeah. That's incredible. I want to get a lot of, there's some great stories in there about some blokes you've had beer with. And I've asked you about your ideal golf foursome. Brad Haddon told us a couple of years ago that he reckons in the current team, Josh Hazlewood has hollow legs, can put in a decent session standing at the bar. In your time, who has sort of had the most endurance?
You're looking at him probably.
Oh. No, aside from yourself, present company excluded.
No, Dougie.
Dougie, of course.
Dougie had endurance like no man alive.
Like Robert De Castella.
oh, God. Yeah. No, what's that bloke that used to run across the deserts?
Oh, Cliffy Young.
Cliffy Young.
Yeah, better than him. There was another one.
That's right, yeah.
There was another one that ran across.
Kurios?
Oh, no. Farmer.
Oh, no. Paddy Farmer?
Was it Paddy?
Yeah, that sounds good. But yeah, yeah. Bloke that ran across the...
Yeah, that's him. Yeah, around Australia.
Well, yeah, well, Dougie ran around the... The bloke that ran around the world, that's who Dougie's like.
There's a great picture of you in this book and off a plane at Heathrow after, I reckon, what, 50 cans?
Oh, well, put it this way. I had no idea. That was an undisciplined act, that. Yeah, I wouldn't like...
you don't condone it, but it happened.
I wouldn't like any of my charges to have done that under my watch.
God, you only think...
I'd have been quietly proud, but I...
If social media had been around in those days. Rod, we appreciate your time. You've been very generous. This book, Rod Marsh, it's announced. Go and grab it. It's more than just your typical autobiography. The as we mentioned, the photos in it, fantastic. I want to get your insight quickly before we go, because we are heading into a summer of cricket where Australia is searching for a new identity and all the culture and all everything. What the bloody hell's wrong with our middle order, Rod? What has happened to batting in the Australian cricket side?
It's pretty simple. We're not making any runs. You know, that's... and look, personally, I think it's a matter of technique. I really do. I think it started a long, long time ago. I mean, what we've got to do is somehow get the best coaches or more than adequate coaches coaching at the lowest level and teach the kids technique. Nowadays, you know, you don't see too much technique being taught. You see a lot of blokes teach some fellas to hit it over mid-wicket.
Is that because of 2020?
Mate, yeah, of course. You know, and the kids themselves, you know, 10 and 12-year-old kids don't necessarily want to play test cricket. They want to play Big Bash.
Mm.
And
or IPL. Well, yeah.
Yeah. So if we're going to be prepared to lose a lot of test matches, then don't worry about that. Teach them to hit the ball in the air and teach them to make room and hit it over cover and teach them that. But if we want to win test matches, we've got to have a look at the way the Indians bat or the Sri Lankans bat. These blokes have got technique.
Good trivia question. They reminds me of a good trivia question in the book as well. How many test matches yourself and DK Lilly and Greg Chappell played on in India?
Yeah, it's a good one, isn't it?
Wow.
Should we give him the answer?
I don't think so. Make him buy the book.
Love that as a hook. Rod Marsh, the book is out today. Thank you for your time. And, hey, you are welcome back here anytime you like.
Well, thank you very much, guys. I've enjoyed it.
Go on your backers.